Welcome to the Future of Supply Chain. Each episode, we bring together leaders across the supply chain space to discuss the role of technology and business model innovation on the future of supply chain. The Future of Supply Chain podcast is presented by Dynamo. Dynamo is a pre-seed and seed stage supply chain investor. To learn more about Dynamo and this show, head over to www.dynamo.vc/podcasts or subscribe on the platform of your choice. Now let's get into the show. Here's our host, Santosh Sankar.
Hey, ladies and gents, welcome back to the Future Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Santosh Sankar. Joining me today, all the way from Dublin, Ireland, Bobby Healy, founder, CEO of Manna. Welcome, Bobby.
Thanks for having me, Santosh. It's a pleasure.
I'm excited to talk shop here and specifically talk drones with you. And it would be great just to kind of level set for our listeners here who may not be as in the know what you and the team are building out there at Manna.
Yeah, well, we are building, I mean, the product is drone delivery as a service. So B2B and B2C, full stack, the whole way from consumer ordering and purchasing app all the way down to the actual aircraft itself, which we design and build and write all the code on board the aircraft as well. So it's a pretty complex and multifaceted stack all the way through. And the end result is drone delivery as a service.
And, you know, I know this, and it's because we're proud investors of Manna, but tell us the Bobby Healy story, how you made your way into the world of drones and drone delivery.
Yeah, well, I'm a programmer. That's my trade. I've been writing code for over 30 years now, and I started off in video games and then travel technology. I built a couple of travel technology businesses, which I sold or traded through private equity. So I kind of, you know, built pretty big software teams and big companies around them. And as a person, I'm a curious minded person. So I like to learn technologies and particularly how they apply in commercial context, i.e. how to take a technology or build a technology, apply it to a problem to solve, you know, a big problem for a big industry. And I've always been, what I would say is, opportunistic about the projects that I've taken on in my life, and always obviously deep technology projects. And then when I had stepped up onto the board in my last business, and I was kind of looking around for the next gig, because I prefer to build companies and to, you know, to run them, even write the code, than as an, or to be an investor or, you know, some kind of more decoupled actor from the coal face. So when I started to think about drones and the maturity of a lot of the components that are typically used on drones, so your computer vision, battery technology, solid state sensors, you know, there's a confluence of various different technologies that when you add them all together, you can build an aircraft that can actually robotically deliver things across the last mile way better than a human can. And then it's practical. So that was the initial idea, really came from the technology, the feasibility of the tech to actually do it. And then I started to look around and say, okay, well, you know, you can build a robot that flies and carry things. What's that good for? And quickly got to Manna, which is, you know, providing a service, a last mile service to replace the road, replace the human in the car or the motorbike or whatever. And the biggest industry that's really suffering today from the cost of last mile is the food delivery industry. So those are the first guys that we served, and now we're serving everything in between.
And, you know, I'm going to kind of build it up to drone delivery, delivering food here, and the business and the economics there. But are there certain use cases that are best suited for drones as we think about developed markets? So whether it's Dublin, Chattanooga, you know, and I'll you know, contrast both those. It's a place like New York, right?
Yeah.
Where are drones best suited, and what are they best suited for?
Yeah, well, in terms of the physical ability of drones, the drones can fly in pretty much any weather for starters, but you're only ever going to get drone delivery in suburban areas. It's not going to work in New York City. So little aircraft don't like to fly beside tall buildings. It's just a physical problem. And then secondly, more importantly, we need about a 2 meter wide flat area on which to deliver the product. So we hover at about 60 feet and we lower the product down to the ground using a winch. So we need that space to deliver onto that customers can get to. So you look at the 82 million, you know, detached single family homes in the United States that are in suburbs, and those are the opportunity. 82 million families, that are going to want pretty much everything that they would get in their car to go out and buy on a regular basis or consume, we can get them, you know, get to them with a drone in the suburbs. So that, so that's kind of the physical is always going to be high density suburbs and down, never in the middle of New York City. But we think that's about 60%+ of the USA market and even more of the European market. So that's the first part. And then the use case is like, what do you sell people? You know, in the end, we're a layer overall in a retailing marketplace or a consuming marketplace. And our, you know, on one side, we actually deliver coffee today, and coffee is our number one delivered product. And you might raise an eyebrow at that. Well, you know, coffee is the number one purchased thing by adults on the planet. Mm-hmm. And it's the highest frequency purchase as well. And so therefore it lends itself well to being delivered by drone, because our flight time is less than 3 minutes now. Our delivery time is less than 3 minutes. So the coffee arrives hot, so it becomes viable to deliver it. And why that's interesting is when you're running a drone delivery business, it's kind of like an airline. So anyone that knows the way an airline works with flight slots that are actually perishable products, I mean, if you miss the flight slot or the seat, should I say, on the plane, you know, you've lost the possibility to sell that product. So it's perishable. And it's the same for drones. If the drone is sitting on the pad and not delivering something, it's inefficient, it's underutilized. And so what you try to optimize for across the 12 hours of your operational day is to fill each of those hours for each of the drones with a, you know, busy schedule. And in our case, it's six flights per hour per drone. And so then you think about the 12 hours, the high frequency breakfast kind of coffee things and pastries in the first 4 hours of the morning. Then you have lunches and you have dinners in the evening. But then throughout you have groceries. And we work with one of the largest grocery retailers in Europe called Tesco. And, you know, they fill nicely the valleys in demand across the rest of the day. So you think about it that way, and you think about, okay, on one hand, I need to make my aircraft, my fleet, you know, high utilization, because that's what drives my economics. But then on the other hand, you think, okay, what do consumers want? And you know, obviously consumers want convenience, they want speed, they want quality, right? So speed, quality, convenience, those are all a given. But if you don't have choice for the consumer, if you don't give them a greater array of different, you know, grocery items, we've 4,500 in our store. If you don't give them great food selections, then they're just going to pick up, you know, an app and use road-based delivery. It's not just about being a 3-minute delivery service that's exciting and, you know, great quality. You also have to actually, in the end, give them what they want to consume, because they'll get bored with drone delivery in the end. It's just another delivery mode for them once they get used to it. You got to sell them everything. So we think about all of those problems, and they're numerous. And until we get to scale, some of them are hard to solve, right? So choice is hard to solve, and, you know, selection, all hard to solve. But we do see a path where we will have a scalable, reliable and safe system that can, you know, effectively deliver about 8 pounds of cargo in 3 minutes to most of the modern world. And so we know that if we build that and we're successful in getting that to scale, we can completely change the way people retail products, small vendors and large, and the way people consume products. So it's a huge, huge transformational change that we're going to bring with the service.
Yeah. And, you know, for our audience here, like, When you say delivering coffee, like, this is piping hot. And coffee, French fries, there are other similar food products in this category that frankly don't travel well. And the only way they travel well is when you have something as timely and as efficient as a drone.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, some people would think, okay, yeah, well, that's cool. You know, the people will only use it once because of the novelty factor of it. But we have a large customer cohort now that have ordered over 100 times from us in just over a year. So people really do switch to the service. And when they switch to drone delivery, they don't go back. You never go back to road-based delivery because of the problems associated with it, right? You've got, you know, a guy in a car or a bike, whatever, showing up at your front door, you know, expecting a tip, being 20 minutes late, being unpredictably late. And in the end, those highly perishable products like coffee or French fries or, you know, those high frequency things, they're not viable to deliver with a human being. It just takes too long. Mm-hmm. It's too, you know, and that having a person sitting in a Starbucks waiting for the coffee to be made and then walking out and getting into a vehicle of some sort and, you know, going to, it's just ridiculous. Given the average basket value of a coffee shop, less than $20, there isn't room to pay someone for 20 minutes or half an hour of their time to move that product around. Yeah. You know, drones can do that an order of magnitude more cheaply than using human beings.
And, you know, how did you choose whether you wanted to go the enabler route or the full stack route with a consumer brand and all that jazz?
Well, the way we think about it is we want to be the delivery platform for every channel, for every partner in every channel. And that was right at the start of we're 3 years old now, and that was a key part of our strategy. And the reason it is important is, well, obviously there's more value if you're selling directly to the consumer. Of course, there's more, you know, margin in the basket for us. And there's no customer acquisition cost with drone delivery. So it's not like a typical marketplace business where your CAC is competing with your revenue. There is no CAC in this space because once you open the service, the entire community that you open the service to goes and looks for it. They actively seek it out, the word of mouth. And the fact that you've got drones flying through the air 12 hours a day, 7 days a week is a big free billboard, right? So it's attractive to own the consumer when you have that part of the stack, the logistics part of the stack. But at the same time, you can't expect to service all demand for a community. Community has its own preferences. Everyone in the community will want, you know, someone will want to go to, you know, shop A, someone will want to go to shop B. So you need a huge amount of choice to get all of the demand, and you need where you want all of the demand, because the more demand and the more demand density, the more efficient your base is, your fleet is, right? So we started to make money over about 400 deliveries a day. And so when you think about, and that's a tiny number of deliveries, so it gets profitable quite quickly. But what you really want to do is optimize that fleet to be at a 70 to 80% utilization. And that's when your margin really, really is important. So consequentially, you really want to have all of the volume for a town for any given, you know, population. And so today, anyway, we serve directly a consumer offering where we even make the product. We make numerous, we make pastries, we make coffee, but we also serve our, you know, Tesco, our retail grocery part. We have a deal with Coca-Cola where we have a direct to consumer offering with Coca-Cola, and you can buy a Coke and get delivered by drone, and that's a direct relationship. And same, we have a relationship with Samsung for their phone shop and accessory shop, and also with Unilever for the Ben & Jerry's ice cream products. And we're starting to test different, you know, what we call different verticals or different modes for the system. But in the end, the technology is agnostic, and we don't care really who we're flying for or even what we're flying. It's just, you know, what we're building is a scalable way to move products quickly from A to B, scalable and safe way, shall I say. And so it does make sense that we would want to, I won't call it democratize the stack. It's almost the opposite. It's, you really want to be 100% replacing the road mode for last mile in any given population. So that's our strategy.
Mm-hmm. And there are probably a lot of people who are, you know, questioning, hey, like, where does safety come in all of this, right? I live in a suburb. There's going to be small aircraft flying over me at some point. Is there a framework? How do you think about safety at Manna? And this is kind of a question I know the answer to, given your safety first culture, but I think it'd be great to walk through for our listeners to better understand that.
Yeah. You know, say it's funny. Safety is both the easiest thing and the hardest thing about this business. And it's the easiest because there's very clearly defined regulations on what your organization needs to be in terms of governance, training, processes, and so on, and oversight. And that's the organizational version. And we're licensed across Europe for that. It's similar kind of to the Part 135 in the United States. And then there's the actual aircraft, the airworthiness of the aircraft. So like, we're looked at by aviation regulators simply as an airline and an aircraft manufacturer. They don't see us any different than Boeing or Airbus or any other company that produces aircraft. And so you're, to get to be safe, you have to be regulated, because you need that independent audit, you know, an oversight on what you're doing. And for us, what that entails is we've been 3 years building now, and still not there, but we believe we'll be there quite soon with a certified aircraft. And having a certified aircraft essentially means that you're going to be able to fly that thing 1 million, 10 million times a day, and you're not going to have catastrophic accidents. And so your actual problem is quite an engineering one. It's the law of large numbers, right? And everything and anything that can go wrong will go wrong if you're doing, you know, 1 million drops a day or 10 million drops a day. So you have an aircraft and set of software systems that have mitigations. You have a hazard matrix that says when this happens, then you do that and then you do that and so on. And that's your hazard matrix. And that's, you know, a set of probabilities, and the product of those probabilities is ultimately the probability of a catastrophic accident for your aircraft. And that number needs to be 10 to the minus 8. So one catastrophic incident in 100 million hours of flight. So that is not your typical engineering problem. That is a really, really difficult both engineering problem to solve, but also product, almost certifiable process to go through. That's what I would say is arduous and long amount of elapsed time and cost, but predictable, right? Because the aviation regulators have known how to do this and have been doing this for decades. And they've essentially taken a diet version of general aviation certification and applied it to drones for our category. And while it kind of looks and smells like a regulated, normal regulated aircraft, a lot of the very onerous overheads of being, for example, a passenger tall aircraft, any of those where you're carrying human beings around, a lot of that overhead, regulatory overhead, goes away. And so while it's still, for a startup, the last thing you need is burden, right? The path of least resistance is always the path you take, so long as it's a fruitful one. But in the case of regulation, there's no shortcuts, none whatsoever, but you end up being safe, right? So, I mean, I've run, this is my fourth business that I've founded and run, and I've never lost a night's sleep in my life. I've never worried. I've always had an exciting journey. I've always enjoyed it, good or bad, the roller coaster of startups. But this business keeps me awake at night. This is the only business where I've ever genuinely, you know, looked at this as the responsibility that's on our shoulders when we fly over populated areas, directly as the crow flies over houses, over children, over public parks. It's a big responsibility, and you can't go fast. You can't cut corners. You can't take risks. They're not yours to take. You're flying on behalf of the community. It is, if you're not safe, a very dangerous thing to do. So, but the end result, right, is when you are certified, when you are ready to start scaling, your moat, the moat that we've already built is numerous years. And no matter how much capital competitor, you know, that might surface for us in the future might have, or no matter how good their team is, you cannot short circuit the time, the elapsed time it takes to get regulated and certified. So while, you know, would I want regulation to go away? No, I wouldn't, because it does kind of prove that we're safe. But it also is essentially the moat that we have now, because we started 3 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say kind of the challenge that is adhering with regulation equally to your last statement there is what allows you to build defensibility, and that compounds as you start to build your drone delivery network out as well, because one needs to be blessed by the regulator, but also have a network that can service this type of population or demand density adequately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, so we see varying designs for drones, fixed wing, quadcopter, et cetera. Like, are there trade-offs? Like, what should I be thinking when I see various designs? How do you parse through this?
Yeah, so you do it in steps. So our aircraft now is a 8-motor quad coax, and so we'll translate it, it's a copter. So it has all of the great benefits of a copter, you know, controllability in wind, you know, all sorts of things that let us deliver very accurately and pretty much take any. So it's great, right? And it's also easy to build quad, and it can be quite a heavy lifter. So we're carrying 8 pounds. We could actually carry quite a bit more, but we've intentionally chosen 8 pounds in our conops. So we love Copter, but Copter is the least efficient aircraft you could possibly build. And given that we're battery powered and the battery energy density equation, we're kind of on the edge of that. We're literally on the edge of what's possible with our aircraft. And so we don't fly as far as we'd like to. So our aircraft will fly about a 3 to 5 mile radius, depending on the prevailing wind. And that's fine, right? That's going to get you the 90th percentile of demand in any population center. But we do also want to fly those 5 mile, 6 mile, 7 mile flights at some point, because in the end, our customers, our partners, whatever, they'll want that. And if you want to increase demand density, or if you want to increase supply choice, should I say, for whatever demand, you need to fly further. And so there's other designs. First of all, there's better batteries coming, but we can't wait for them. We need to get going and start, you know, generating. There's other designs like the VTOL design. So VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing, which is a hybrid between a copter, which brings you straight up and straight down, and a fixed wing for your forward motion of the aircraft. And why that's really nice is you get a much longer range when you're flying forward, because the wing gives you lift. In fact, it's about 7 times more efficient to fly with a wing than it is with a copter in forward motion. The problems or the trade-offs there are the aircraft tends to be very difficult to handle in wind, and it tends to be very difficult to accurately position. And even to make it redundant, you need 8 motors minimum to make an aircraft redundant, so that if you lose a motor, you can still safely fly the aircraft home or to a rally point. With a VTOL, because of the wing, there doesn't tend to be as much room on the aircraft for all those motors. So you'll see most VTOLs will only have 4 motors. And that's just a product that's never going to be certified. It's never going to be safe to fly that overpopulated area because motors fail. Anyway, so there's trade-offs, but I've no doubt that the best starting point for business to start scaling and to do the land grab that's going to happen from next year onwards is a copter, because we can deliver everything in the store. We can deliver it for a really small battery cost, and we can do that in 98% of Irish weather, which means it's probably 150% of the rest of the world's weather. So yeah, copter is the right way to start. But I would say, if you ask me, will we one day have a VTOL? I would say, yes, that's probably likely.
And you mentioned kind of the specific copter you've developed. That then goes through, every time you develop it, it has to go through a verification process with the regulator as well in order to get their approval around how it's built, its safety spec.
That's right. And it isn't a short process. So what you do is, you build something, you start with your requirements, you start to look at the market. What does the market need? Just physically, how much do we need to move in terms of weight and volume? How far do we need to move it? How many flights do we need out of an aircraft before it's no longer usable? You answer those kind of commercial business questions first, and then you design your aircraft to meet those needs. And so long as you've done the right job in terms of your product strategy, i.e. the functional capability of the aircraft, and so long as your engineering delivers those capabilities, then you're ready to scale. And so you're going to have a parallel track. And again, you can think almost of an airline where you'll have the long haul wide body aircraft that American Airlines might have, and then the short range, you know, narrow body aircraft for the regional traffic. And for us, we'll go with this first copter aircraft, which will be plenty enough to scale to get that, you know, gigantic opportunity of high frequency, low value items. So groceries, takeaway, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll also have in parallel with that another aircraft, which will do more, which will be going in parallel through the certification process. And we'll start to layer on. I don't think many aircraft in the fleet, maybe only 2, but it certainly won't be 1. But the one that we start with is already on its own an opportunity of incalculable value. If we can get that thing scalable, which I'm confident we can, then we literally have a market the size of the entire planet for last mile that we can transform. So that's what we're going to be focusing on once we get our certs, which is next year. That's, we're going to be focused on that scaling, that land grab. and in parallel do the other aircraft development.
And so kind of stepping back, looking at the U.S., what are the major things holding back drone delivery in our suburbia environments, rather? Is it regulation? It doesn't sound like it's technology, but kind of when might we see this in a more ubiquitous fashion?
Well, we're seeing it already. I mean, Mana, my company, is planning to be in the US at the end of this year. We're going to run a project on the East Coast. You see Wing, Google's drone delivery program, doing a great job. They started in Australia, they're now operating in Dallas-Fort Worth area. There's other companies like Zipline as well. Amazon have recently mentioned or set their intention on a small town in Texas where they're going to roll their drone delivery program. So companies are starting to, start the engines and show the world what drone delivery will mean, or show, you know, folks in the United States what it's going to mean. What's holding it back in the USA, which is a shame, is just the pace and the clarity on the regulatory timeline just isn't there yet. It will, but the problem the United States has, it's such a busy airspace. There's an airport every 100 yards, you know. I mean, you throw a potato, you're going to hit an airport anywhere you go in the States. And so there's a lot of stakeholders there that don't exist in Europe that have lobbies and that have special needs and so on that slows the progress down in the US. You know, but they're getting there. There's been a huge amount of activity just in the last 12 months from the FAA around beyond visual line of sight, you know, the rulemaking committee on the rules for that, right of way and so on. So I do think that while the USA is probably a year, maybe even 2 years behind where Europe is, I think ultimately it's not going to matter too much, because when the US is ready for this at scale, companies like ours will be ready to start operating at scale as well. And the USA in the end is our number one market by far. Like, as a company, even though we're headquartered in Ireland, the only market we're really looking at hard is the United States. But that doesn't stop us and shouldn't stop us from scaling in other markets first, where the regulations permit that.
And might I say, you're in Ireland, firstly, because you have an Irish accent, so you are from there, that is home. But equally, Ireland is the epicenter for the aviation industry. So there's a lot of know-how, intelligence networks.
Yeah, not like 98% of aircraft leasing is done out of Ireland. And 90% of transatlantic flights flow through our airspace and are managed by our ANSP. So yeah, we do have good aviation DNA, and we've, you know, good entrepreneurial and tech DNA. The disadvantage Ireland has is capital. You know, we have very few funds in Ireland that have the scale and the muscle that would be required to power a business like ours. And, you know, witness, if you look at our seed round led by you guys, Dynamo, then our Series A round led by Molten, UK-based investor. You know, while Ireland is a great place for you know, what I would say, small startups, you know, for startups that really need a lot of capital to scale, it's probably not the best place. But when you combine the regulatory position in Ireland, because it's part of Europe, with the government intent to liberalize the airspace or commercialize the airspace, that's the perfect storm where a little startup like ours with 110 people in it can not just catch up with, but overtake the biggest companies in the world in the progress that we're making, because we have, you know, capital, regulatory and government support. And that just doesn't exist yet in the United States. It will, but not yet.
Mm-hmm. And you know, so you've alluded to the economics of drone delivery previously, right? Where a coffee shop has an average basket value of $20, doesn't kind of make sense to use humans to deliver that. How do you think about the economics of drone delivery, and how does one kind of get on that path to make it, say, kind of a dollar a delivery type model?
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it'll be at scale. So our aircraft are fully autonomous, so they don't need any human input. So that's the first part, then, except for the loading of the aircraft, right? So you need to get the cargo onto the aircraft, which takes about 30 seconds. So one human being can do about 20, 25 deliveries per hour with drones. So that's, when you think about the cost, the personnel cost, you think, okay, the DoorDash of this world and so on, they're going to get anywhere from 1.5 to 3 deliveries per hour per delivery driver. So let's say that's, you know, 2.5 deliveries per hour per person. In our case, it's 10 times that. So our cost is 1/10 the personnel cost of normal delivery. And then our only other input costs are the depreciation on the battery over about 700 flights, the wear and tear and depreciation on the motors over their, you know, useful life, about 600 hours. So you have this really small input cost of hardware, you know, unit-based depreciation. And after that, then one of our aircraft will do about 125,000 flights before it be retired. And one aircraft will do, well, as I said, 6 deliveries per hour or about 70, 75 deliveries a day. They're highly productive little machines. So the economics are incredibly attractive. And you have, what's nice about it is there's no technology risk in what we're talking about. So if you look at the autonomous driving industry, that's an industry that's been kind of waiting on technology proof for quite a long time. And when it happens, then all of the ride hailing businesses become instantly profitable, right? When that technology risk is somehow canceled out. But in our case, there is no technology risk. All of the technology we're using is well proven, commercially available technology, and we're already flying it. So we don't have that big binary issue of will we ever get to profitability. We'll be profitable on a unit basis next year. We'll be making money on a per flight basis. And then thereafter, as we start to scale, where we get our benefits of scaling, we will be at about $1 fully loaded cost per delivery. And there's room to do even better than that. But even just that alone straight away transforms most retail businesses, because the coffee shop that we power, you know, reaches 30 square miles of customers in 3 to 5 minutes. The bookshop that we power in a small town, 35,000 people, but that bookshop beats Amazon with their delivery system, you know, and while, you know, they don't have the same number of books, there's a world where drones allow those little bricks and mortars vendors in local communities, suburban communities, to actually digitalize their products, have online businesses with robotic delivery that really, really works and increases their catchment area. And the key to enabling that really is safety, because we know the economic numbers are going to work really well.
And so I'm going to kind of shift here as we wrap up. You are a three-peat, four-peat founder here. What's a piece of advice you have to others who might be listening in as they're about to go on the journey, whether that's building a supply chain-oriented business or otherwise?
I used to joke, I used to moisturize really well. No, so my advice is, you know, I've only ever built businesses that I've enjoyed building, right? So my motivation, while it's, of course, commercial in the end, and that's how I measured the success, I want to enjoy building the business that I'm involved in. So for me, I've always chosen my last two businesses. My last business, I started and ran it for 15 years. The one before that was 12 years that I started it in Mexico City and sold that 12 years later. And the one before that was video games, where I was building all these video games, was 2 years, so much shorter. But my advice to founders is, you know, obviously go for it. Be sure that you're going to have to give 10 years of your life, nothing less than that, to really do. Most businesses need a decade to do them justice. And then, of course, and this is not a cliche, even though it sounds like one, your success will be made or not by the team you put together. And don't take shortcuts there. Work very, very hard to get the best team.
Love it. And then finally, you know, we're in the heart of summer here. What's Bobby's favorite summer activity?
Today was, the last 2 days have been the highest recorded temperatures ever in Ireland, in 174 years recording temperature. And I was in my house debugging a bit of C++ code that reads telemetry off motors. So I'm afraid everyone's going to call me a gigantic loser for this, but I still love writing and debugging code. And that's what I do.
That's shameful. Yeah, I love it. Well, with that, I appreciate you giving us the deep dive into the world of drones and equally hearing how Manna is leading the charge there. We all look forward to your U.S. entry.
Thanks very much, Santos.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you liked. And be sure to head over to podcast.dynamo.vc to keep up to date with our latest content or subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Until next time.